At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
Welcome to Becoming is Messy, where we dive deep into the journey of survival, transformation, and everything in between. I'm your host, Megan Dawson, here to share the honest, unfiltered stories behind my own process of becoming. Life isn't a pretty and perfect straight line, and neither is becoming the person we're meant to be. Here, we embrace the ups, the downs, all the beautiful, chaotic, messy moments that shape who we are. Whether you're in the thick of change or reflecting on past transformations, this space is for real conversations about what it means to grow, stumble, and rise again. So get comfy, settle in, and let's get messy. Hello, Messies. I'm especially excited for today's conversation because it's been building in the background for a few weeks. If you happen to tune into episode 16 with Dr. Red Hoffman, you might remember that she recommended a book, This is Body Grief by Jean Mattingly. Red not only recommended the book, she also said, you have to have Jane on your podcast. She is exactly who you want in this space. And once I read the book, I knew that she was right. Body grief is both deeply personal and yet universally relatable for anyone who's ever felt let down, betrayed, or confused by their body. Jane Mattingly puts into words so much of what my experience has felt like. Living in a body that I loathed for the first 30 years of my life, a body that I blamed for my pain, my addictions, and my shame. Jane is a disability advocate, eating disorder recovery coach, the founder of the END Initiative, and CEO of Recovery, Love, and Care. She has lived through 19 surgeries, a spinal cord injury, and multiple chronic conditions, including intracranial hypertension and endometriosis. She writes with brutal honesty and boundless compassion about what it means to grieve the body you thought you'd have and how to find peace with the one that you're in. I'm so honored to introduce you to somebody who has quickly become an inspiration to me. Jane, welcome to Becoming is Messy.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm just so excited to be here.
Awesome. All right. Help us set the stage for today's chat. In just a few words, how would you describe this current season of your life?
Oof. Well, I'm in a lot of joy right now that everyone is able to understand and have this book. I was writing this book for 3.5 years, and I'm just so happy it's out in the world and we can all start healing together. This is Body Grief, Making Peace with the Loss that Comes with Living in a Body. I think a misconception that is so often had is that we are grieved, that we get to a destination and check, we're done. But no, you know, I am continuing to grieve and I am continuing to heal. So that is very real for me. I'm still very much in my body grief and I will continue to be in that. But it's compounded, right? And we're continuing to heal. But I'm just in a lot of gratitude and joy receiving so many messages and testimonials, just being able to connect with people over their stories. Yeah, I'm just really feeling that.
Oh, I love that. I feel joy, connection, so excited. I feel like just what you've named and put out in the world, I think so many of us have been craving to have words for. And so I just had goosebumps thinking of the amount of connection that you're creating in this world. So
Thank you. So
appreciate that. And can't wait to dive into the book. I have lots of questions there. But before we dive deep into that, every becoming story has its own messy path. Yeah. Take us backwards a little bit. What has brought you to this moment where you have become the advocate that you are and you put this book into the world? What are some of those twists and turns that have led you to today?
So many twists and turns.
Yes, that's right.
And you know, everyone has them, right?
Of course.
But for me, it really started when I was younger. And I talk about this very much so in the book and within everybody's journey, is body grief is so universal, and it starts when we are in a body. Grief is inherently just when we are in a body and having a body. And I would say that my body grief journey really started when my body started to change without my control. And that was when I became very body conscious when I was 9 years old and went through puberty at a really young age. And I don't think I was aware. I know I wasn't aware of these emotions and the name for it, body grief. But now with hindsight, I know that's exactly what was happening. And I cover all of that. And with that and knowing, you know, now what I know, all of that was body grief. And to protect myself from the feelings and the big emotions that were happening and the changes that were occurring that I could not control within myself as a little 9 year old, and the male gaze that was happening in my little body that was becoming a woman, I coped through restriction. I coped through making myself as small as possible, both symbolically and physically. And that manifested itself into an eating disorder. And I was a dancer. And, you know, that only lent itself more into the eating disorder and body image problems. And it went under the radar, which is really common for eating disorders, especially within that time, early 2000s, you know, it was really misunderstood. And then I, you know, sought recovery when I was about 22 years old. And then I received my master's in clinical mental health counseling, you know, turned my problem into my purpose, right? And my purpose into my passion, very internalized capitalism. And then I was helping people within their eating disorders and their body image. And I was shouting from the rooftops, you know, don't work out and don't move for what your body looks like. You know, do it for what your body can do, what your body can do. And I was so proud of that sentiment. And at that time, like, that was kind of a revolutionary statement.
Definitely. Yeah, you know, definitely.
We're like, oh, yeah. And, you know, I was seeing clients and I was doing events. And then all of a sudden, I was 27 years old and I was non-disabled, quote unquote, healthy, whatever that might be. I became incredibly ill. I lost my sight. I was diagnosed with a rare neurological disorder called intracranial hypertension. And I had my first of many brain surgeries. And my life completely halted. I was faced with that sentiment of love your body for what it can do. My body's not doing anymore.
Yeah.
And my entire world came crashing down. I was like, what now? Where's my worth? Where's my value? I realized all this work I was doing with my clients surrounding the loss that they had with their eating disorders and their bodies, I was facing it too, but just in a little bit of a different way. And I was like, this is body grief. I am grieving this life that I had, this life that I felt I was entitled to, this life that I want. And I started going through all of these phases. And so my life really changed. I was then diagnosed with a genetic disorder I was born with that really made sense as we looked back on things, called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It's a connective tissue disorder. And again, I had 19 brain and spine surgeries over 6 years' time, a total hysterectomy as well. You know, I sound so dissociated when I talk about it because I have to be, right? It's grief.
Yep.
It's big grief. But I also talk about how there's no hierarchy to suffering. And, you know, grief can be from, body grief can be from literally getting a paper cut to puberty, to gender dysphoria, to racial inequity, to pregnancy loss, to, you know, miscarriage. It could be, you know, to menopause. That was kind of what got me into this work. And I realized I wanted to study and I wanted to hear people's stories and I wanted to really start to research this. And that's what came of this book.
Wow. You're phrasing. There's so much I want to touch on there. But one thought I had was your phrasing of just how you sound matter of fact talking about these things.
Yeah.
And I get that a lot. People will say to me, where's your rage? Aren't you mad? Aren't you pissed off? I've gone through all of those phases, but I also think my own coping has been to smile and bear it and view myself as a survivor and I am strong.
Yeah.
I had those feelings of, okay, eventually accepting what my body can do, then something else was taken away.
You know,
some other chronic illness would pop up, some other limitation, and it's been a never-ending cycle. And so if I was mad every single second with every single thing that happened to me, I would never not be pissed off.
And that does happen, right? Like
right.
You meet people, there are people that stay mad forever. And to be honest, that can be easier.
Definitely.
And I think that's another thing too. Like, I don't know how you feel about this, but you know, with this framework, I think that's one thing that's really
right.
Important,
yeah. Yes.
Right.
Definitely.
Like, these phases are something that we've all been through.
That's right.
Here are ways in which like we can start to cope and we can start to maybe like burn out of these phases a little bit quicker. And like, maybe it's just a harm reduction, really.
Yeah.
It's harm reduction. And what I like to look at is, okay, so maybe, and these phases are multi-cyclical and they're non-linear and it's like there's no destination. And I was in, you know, apology this week. And then last night I was on the porch and I was bawling my eyes out. And then I realized like, but I'm, you know, I'm using all my skills and I'm feeling my feelings and I'm in my mind, body, spirit connection. And like, this is how healing body grief looks.
Yeah.
Where in the past, I would have been not feeling the pain, like not feeling my body grief, fighting through the pain, probably cleaning my house on my knees, because that's how I used to do it.
Yeah.
And some people would have been like throwing back drinks, self-medicating, and then being really angry to their family. And I'm talking about maybe if their body grief was chronic pain, which is
of course
very much mine.
Yeah.
And so like, I wonder if that's for you, like, does it show up like that too? Like in waves?
In waves. Yeah. So I feel like that resonated so strongly with me in that I used to view life as that upward growth where you get to the next level and you've moved past. And when you mentioned that your philosophy was once, you know, what your body can do, my philosophy used to be that. And now my philosophy is just whatever energy my body is feeling in the moment is real. I honor what it's telling me. And so that looks very much like what you described. Some days I do feel sorry for myself. Some days I take really long naps just to give myself a break from it all. And then I have bursts of energy and bursts of feeling great and grateful for what I've been given, trying to make purpose out of the lot I've been given. And I feel so lucky for that big change. So it is what you're describing. And as we're talking body grief specifically, there was a quote from you that I come back to a lot. And it just, let me just read it. It said, if you've ever felt like your body was working against you, that ache, that sorrow, that rage is what I call body grief. The longing and mourning that accompany the loss of bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
In such few words, you somehow managed to name feelings that I felt so overwhelmed with for so long. I honestly felt guilty for feeling those things. For a while, I felt, just suck it up. This is what you've been faced with. And I didn't honor those feelings. And just curious, as you started to name those things, I think just even the term body grief, it is powerful to those of us that haven't had words for just the complexity of what we're feeling.
Yeah.
And so for you, as you sat down to write some of these words, how did you start coming up with ways to articulate what you were feeling?
Ooh, yes. I mean, first off, I think so much of it was because there wasn't anything out there when I was healing. You know, for people who deal with chronic illness and disability or chronic pain, when I was in my, you know, grieving journey, and I still am, but there wasn't literature out there. Like, there wasn't anything for me to, you know, love Rebecca Taussig, Sitting Pretty. Like, there are things out there about living in a disabled body or living in, you know, their body image books and things of that sort. But there wasn't anything about like grieving your body because it was changing and how we don't have to change it. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah, and definitely.
So I just would like, I think I have to like kind of work on things and also create a space in which I need to heal. And so I started working on things with my team and like my medical and healthcare team, but also through storytelling and community and community care. And it was kind of revolutionary just to sit through community and to sit with feelings and to sit with the doctors and people and family that would actually listen. And so that's how things came about, is truly through listening and research and writing. That's how I really came up with things. When it came to things like perceived body betrayal and the terms body grief, those types of things came up through the work I did with eating disorders and body image. I have used those terms and frameworks for a long time. And it's interesting because eating disorder care is what I specialized in, you know, listening to your body and trusting your body and it being a two-way street, you know, that applies to everybody. But I come from a framework that you don't have to fix. I come from a harm reduction framework, I guess. You know, I don't come from carceral care. I don't come from fighting through it. So I think it's pretty evident that I come from like a pretty social justice, compassionate feminist lens.
Yes, that comes through clearly. And yeah, for folks though that I described, that for me, that rage and shame used to be a pretty tough cycle of days when pain or another surgery, doubt, I'd get stuck in those cycles. And for folks that you haven't yet started honing in on the seven steps.
Oh, yeah.
You know, how do you advise folks to start untangling those messy feelings? Where to begin?
Mm-hmm. Well, aside from buying the book.
Of course.
All jokes aside.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the biggest things is having compassion for yourself. You know, that is, and it sounds so rudimentary, but it's really one of the most important things. I see people constantly just being so hard on themselves because of the lack of patience we have for ourselves, where it's like we're just so inconvenienced by our bodies. We're so inconvenienced where it's like, oh my God, well, I have a party this weekend or it's my birthday next weekend, but I'm sick and I'm just so pissed.
Yes.
That's our bodies telling us to slow down.
Yeah, that's
our
so
body
true.
Is going to whisper until, and if we don't listen, it is going to find other ways to tell us to slow down. And that is a privilege because let me tell you, if we stop listening to it, it will find other ways. And when you're in like a chronically ill body or a disabled body, sometimes it doesn't do that. And that is something that I grieve. And when it doesn't send you those things, because it's like, hey, I'm tapped out.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when people say, you know, I really don't want to get older. That is grief. That is unhealed body grief. That is valid. And aging is a privilege.
That's so true.
And so compassion, compassion, compassion. We have to feed. We have to water. We have to nourish our bodies. We have to be kind. We have to play. We have to rest. And usually the people that can't tap into the feelings, can't tap into the messiness, are so enmeshed in their internalized systems of oppression. They're so enmeshed in internalized control, internalized capitalism, internalized ableism, sexism. You know, they're just like, I must do, I must hustle, I have to perform. And it's exhausting.
There's something in your words in the book that is motivational. To me, I love the quote that body grief is not just about what we have lost. It's about what we can build when we finally acknowledge it. Yeah. Mm. And so I'm curious what type of stories you're hearing from people who are starting to get that message, that mm-hmm. shift in thinking. Because to me, with my own story, I took control of what I can control. It's like I have to acknowledge that there are things that my body can't do, but there's things that everybody's body can't do. It's just that we all have some level of that. And so there's power in acknowledging just what is and not viewing, just accepting it and leveraging whatever you have to move you forward.
No, exactly. I think so much of what I've heard, especially in the past 2 months since the book has been out, is not only the freedom of naming it, but this idea of people finally having a release, like an emotional release of saying, like, the weight of all of these emotions being tied up in the body. And it, like, almost like they cried like it was at the end of the book, they finally cried like it was the death of someone. They were mourning a death of someone. And it was like this freedom almost afterwards of I can be rather than do. I can be who I need to be, and I'm going to figure this out. And in the book, there's so many things you can do, right? Like, there's tools and exercises and all the things. Because I was like, we live in a world where everyone's going to want to do. All right.
That's right.
So I was like, we got to put little nuggets in there and affirmations. But I think that's one of the biggest things I'm hearing is people feel independent. They feel more free. They feel they have more grace with themselves, and they don't feel so scared. They don't feel so terrified. They don't feel as locked in and trapped in their bodies.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that resonates so strongly. You describe the fight phase of body grief as trying to hustle your way back to your old body, your old life. Hey, Messies, quick pause before we dive back in. If you're loving these conversations and want a little extra support on your own becoming journey, head over to megandawson.com. You can sign up for my weekly email. It's like a little love note from the messy middle, filled with stories, tools, and truths to help you feel less alone. And if you're looking for personalized support, I've got a few spots open for one-to-one coaching. If that's been on your heart, let's talk. All right, back to the episode.
Since 1981, Unbound has connected people like you with families worldwide on their self-directed paths out of poverty. A brighter future is possible for these families when we all walk together. Sponsor a child today, and you'll help a family take the first steps on their path. Change their future in just one click. Start walking with your new friend today at unbound.org/walk.
My first major medical challenges happened at birth. I caught an infection that ruined all of my joints, and I had to eventually have limbs lengthened and hips replaced. It's been a lifetime of that. And so I don't have an old body or old life that was taken from right from the beginning. Yet, like so many people with different forms of chronic trauma as a child, was such an extreme perfectionist. And I think I just spent my whole life trying to prove I was worthy.
Right.
And this year, I actually went to my husband. My husband has been one of the biggest forms of support. And I love following some of your posts about your own relationship. In some ways, he's not a hero for being with me. We are an equal partnership. We're a strong marriage and all of that. Yet I would say the peace that he's brought into my life and how much he believes in me and encourages me. It was my first time I went to him late last year, and I just said, I am so tired of hustling. Can I just take a break? I ended up leaving my corporate job and launching this business that I wasn't planning on doing for 5 years. It has just been so incredible to just admit for the first time in my life that I just wanted to put the fight down. And I wanted to honor the rest. And that has been like a game changer. I feel the best I've felt in my whole life.
Oh my gosh. Bravo. That's beautiful. I can feel it.
Yeah. It's neat to pass that perfectionist crown and take it off during you've had a lifetime with it.
It's terrifying and it's a relief.
So I am curious, what is the cost of that fight? And what helped you begin to surrender up for yourself?
For me, unfortunately, the cause of the fight was my body.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I just was so deep in it that I talk about it in the book, but I was just so in my body grief and I was not willing to face it. I had so much internalized ableism where I was not ready to use my mobility aids like they were supposed to be used. We were not fit as a household. We were not ready to have an accessible household. A lot of this was because everything started so quickly. It happened so fast. Yeah. Falls happened really a lot. I ended up in the ER quickly. Surgeries were happening. Like, I think one year there were 7 surgeries. And then I would come home and like I would do irresponsible things. I would get on my knees and clean and lift things. And I didn't hurt myself in those things, but I wasn't helping.
Yeah.
And then my body started to reject all of the hardware that was put in my body to save me. And so it was like, my body was like, just kidding. You did all of this work to save you that you had to do and you had no choice. Now we have to take out everything else and we have to go through all of this again. If we are to take out everything, you would be paralyzed from the diaphragm down, or you're going to be really sick and reliant on all of these other things for the rest of your life, which is where I am. And I was like, well, shit.
Yeah.
I have to do the work.
Yeah.
And I was really forced into it. I don't wish that on anybody.
I think the universe does that in so many ways.
Yeah.
I feel like where when you don't get the message and you just keep fighting against it, it just keeps bringing additional pressure to finally heed the call that your life is meant to look different and honor what your body's saying. But it is hard not to fight it and not do all of the things that you were used to viewing as normal.
Oh, yeah. And so that was my story. And I was like, let's not do it that way.
In there, you referenced the word ableism, and I think that was another use of language in your book that I feel like you use powerfully is just the different systems of oppression, ableism, sexism, racism, and how they contribute to intensifying body grief. And just how does naming those systems help people begin to work through this process?
Oh, I love this question. So inherently, our bodies are political with where we are in our world right now.
Yeah.
You know, we just cannot deny it. And with that and how we heal, we have to recognize our privilege. And the reason why is because when I started writing this book, the more and more I heard stories and sat down with people, I realized I wasn't writing a book just about body grief. I was writing a book about systems of oppression. I was writing a book about how the control in which we live under affects our bodies and vice versa. And how if the systems of oppression were gone, we really wouldn't have much body grief at all, except for pain. Really, we wouldn't have much body grief. So, you know, I think disability is a great example. So being disabled isn't bad, you know, and I think that is where ableism comes in. People who are ableist or non-disabled, we have been conditioned to think disability equals bad, right? Neurodivergence equals bad. We must fix, especially now in this political world. We are being told we need to fix. And it's like people who are neurodivergent they do not believe that. They are happy with who they are. And the world is not set up for them. Same with being physically disabled. As someone who is newly disabled, I love my community. I love the disabled community. It is a beautiful community. And actually, I can confidently say that being physically disabled has been one of the best things that has ever happened to me, because it has humbled me and I've learned so much more about just God, the world and myself. The world is not accessible. There's no sidewalks where I live. I can't get into my favorite coffee shops. I live in Charleston, South Carolina. There's cobblestone sidewalks everywhere downtown. Gosh. But I mean, let me just tell you, like, the world is not accessible.
No.
And so that is what's hard about being a disabled person.
Yeah.
The other part about what's hard about being a disabled person is that we are infantilized, we're invisible, but then we're also hyper visible.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's very odd. You know, the same, I cannot speak on racism being, I'm very white, you know, privilege. I have so much privilege in that area. But the same goes with, like, if we lived in a world where we weren't colonizing all the time, you know, it's not bad to be Black or BIPOC, right? But there's grief in so much of that. And there's grief in being trans, but not because you are trans, but because of how the world
treats, right? You have so many light bulbs going off. You know, of experiences that I've had that I haven't been able to articulate why they hurt so much. And one that comes to mind is, I don't know if I've ever told this story, but I have a vivid memory of a boyfriend I had when I was in third grade. He was the most popular boy, and he asked me in a note to be his girlfriend. And he was my boyfriend for a year, which really, he was my best little friend. Like, we did everything together. And in the fourth grade was when people started making fun of my short arms, my limp. Before fourth grade, I was seen as special, and I felt that way. I felt lucky to go to hospitals. I felt lucky to be me. I didn't view me as bad or good. I was just me. And very vividly in the fourth grade, when he broke up with me and started dating in fourth grade, silly dating, but his little girlfriend became the most popular girl in school. And ever since then, that was like a turning point where kind of the school turned against me, and my problems with boys and eventually men were born after that, because after that period is when I was named as different. I lived with that for so many years. I think that if society didn't name my disability different, that wouldn't have been my experience.
Exactly. That's the thing. I thank you for sharing that. That's the thing, is that, like, it's not a bad life. I mean, I know for me with my chronic pain, that's a different body grief experience, right?
Oh, definitely.
Like, I'm like, F this. I don't want that.
Somebody the pain is too much. And people that don't have, that's a hard one to try to verbalize. Just how much
it's isolating. It's terrible. Yeah. And the body grief healing phases are very helpful for that, I think. Yeah. Like, that is where I'm constantly, constantly going back to the framework. I mean, literally every single day. But to be honest, I don't remember what your question was, but
I don't even know if I added one after that, but I'll move us along. I feel like I'm having so many moments of just light bulbs going off that it's hard not to just share what's in my brain and forget that we're not just having a conversation and having coffee. But I will get to another question. It's another one that's just using your own words, because to me, your words say so much. Just like you said, you've named those steps in body grief, but you didn't create them.
In some ways,
those of us that are wanting to not just live pissed off the whole time and want to take some level of ownership, I feel like walk through those phases. And I think just the shifting from why is this happening to me to what now,
right,
I feel is such an empowerment shift. And just wanted your perspective on how that language has changed your perspective, and just anything you've seen or heard from others, what that language has done.
Yes, that is truly one of the biggest things for me.
It's
been incredibly helpful. I think, you know, when we're in the fault phase, when we're like, why did this happen? You know, why am I feeling this way? Or, you know, when you're living in a body that is acting up, or you're not feeling well, or you have, like, let's say you're in menopause or perimenopause, or you're dealing with hormonal issues, or you are dealing with like pregnancy loss, or you're dealing with, you know, chronic illness, and you're just like, I don't feel well today. Why am I not feeling well today? What did I do to cause this? And it's like, don't blame yourself. Don't play the blame game, because how is that helping anybody? The thing has already happened. And so let's ask ourselves, what now? Like, what do I need right now? What can I do right now to be compassionate to myself? What do I need to do right now to grieve and heal? And instead of being like, okay, I'm going to go work out, and I'm going to go, and like, maybe the workout is helpful, but a gentle workout, you know, like, because if you're not feeling well, I don't want us to go for, you know, a 10-mile hike or a run or something like that. But I was just recently in a book club where someone shared that this was the most helpful skill that they've learned throughout all their life. But it's these like little nuggets, I think, that can be just revolutionary to our healing.
It's just like a snowball. Like, when you start getting, it might feel foreign at first. You might push against that and you might still be pissed and sad. But I feel like when you start doing that mantra of what now, what's next, it becomes like a meditation, and your gut begins to answer.
And I realize, because I think I do this thing, and I think it's because I'm hard on myself, you know, but I do this thing where I'm like, am I really helping people? Like, is that, you know, even after this podcast, right? I'll be like, I don't know if I, you know, was that even helpful? Like, but then I'm like, you know, I remember being in therapy, and one of the most simple things my therapist said to me, and he probably was like, did I even help her? You know, because I've done supervision groups where therapists are like, I don't know if I'm helping my clients. I think a lot of therapists feel this way. We're all like insecure.
It's human. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, instead of good or bad, I want you to say helpful or unhelpful. And ever since then, it's literally all my husband and I say, like, because it's such a good shift in like at things and thinking about the gray. And so I was like, maybe these types of like just simple why or what, you know, instead of what, why, think of what now, because now that entire framework has changed my entire like way of living. Instead of Googling my symptoms like I used to and fault chasing or flare chasing, I put on a heating pad. I get some electrolytes. I sit on my porch and I read. The way in which that is care to my body rather than like spiking my cortisol levels because I'm like, why did this happen?
Yeah. That's so true.
It's just beautiful.
Yeah, that is so beautiful. And I so relate to that. To me, my day-to-day is guided by energy. Yeah. And I can't explain it when your book is one part of this. But I feel like in this year, it's just choosing. I'm not doing anything directly for anybody else. I am doing things that feel aligned to me and feel energized. Like, I too love my heating pad. I feel like these kind of conversations, like this podcast has been life-changing for me. And some episodes get more views than another, but episode I hear from at least one person, like at least one person that says, I needed that message. Not only that, but I also benefit from the energy and the cool people I'm meeting. There's a reason why I feel like you and I were able to connect when we do. Absolutely. And there's meaning to that. How we're thoughtful following the what now and listening to what your intuition tells you. Because that next step that makes you feel energized and good, whatever that is right for you.
Powerful.
One of the hardest types of grief is mourning the version of your life that you never got to live. I think, how do you honor that without getting stuck in it?
That is something that I am in right now.
Yeah.
Sean and I, my husband and I, are very much like dreamers. Mm-hmm. We love to dream.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we used to do this thing when we lived closer to the beach where we'd like drive around and on Folly Beach in Charleston and like be like, that house, like that's where we would live. And now what we're doing is very much like a shift in perspective and being like, okay, we are being realistic on what life is going to be. And also, this is our one life, and we're not like negotiating on joy. We're not negotiating.
That's a good statement. We're not negotiating on joy.
We're just not. Yeah, like, this, especially with the grief that we live with and the pain we live with. And so we're figuring out what that means for us. And, you know, yeah, that's truly what we're doing is we're having like right now conversations about what that means and if that means renting out the house and traveling or.
Yeah.
Truly.
In your response, you use the phrase realistic as well as not treating on joy. I feel like sometimes it's like we feel like you can't have both of those. You know, right. That joy is this pie in the sky thing when you're struggling with the types of things that we're talking about. Yet I feel to me it's powerful to hear that you could hold truth. You could feel pain, yet you're not settling for anything less than joy.
Yes. I think when people hear grief, they're like, oh, it's too heavy.
Yeah.
And it's like there's so much gratitude and joy when it comes to healing your grief and your body grief. Like, I've never felt this much joy in the last 7 years. Like, my joy is bigger because I'm healing the grief.
Yeah. I find they say that grieving a person is proof that you had love in your life. And I feel like grieving a body is no different. Grieving what could have been, I feel like just means that, you know, that there's things and dreams and there's love within you. And it's not a negative to feel those. To me, it's cathartic. And that heals you forward to just allow yourself to feel it.
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, it's all very real. And I think a lot of people are going through that right now with loss of bodily autonomy, politically, and where we are and reproductive rights and all the things. It's just very weird time.
Such weird times, yet I also have hope. I've always believed that there's balance to the universe. And the lower we go, if we allow that.
Yes.
And I think right now that is true on the individual level, all the way that there's struggle right now. But pretending there's not struggle is limiting overcoming it and going higher.
Oh, interesting.
So that's a belief I have. And it's one of those sometimes with the life I've been given. It's to make sense. I think that there's just trying to find meaning in it. And to me.
Yes.
And it just continues to be proven. I feel like there's always a good after a bad. And it always just seems to be in direct correlation in how intense that is.
Absolutely.
Just going to keep believing in that. We have a rapid segment where it's just quick questions just to get to know you a little bit more. Yeah. So these are just quick responses. No need to overthink. But what's one thing your body loves that surprises people?
Oh, my gosh.
Surprises you or just unique to you?
I love dancing.
Yeah.
Dancing is my favorite.
Yeah. I love that.
Maybe that would surprise some people.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Yeah.
I think that there's surprise in misconceptions of what enabled bodies are able to do.
I would say dancing.
I love that. Do you have a go-to comfort show that you like to watch these days?
Yeah, right now, it's Grace and Frankie.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I've watched that show four times, but it's always Modern Family.
Yes. Like, oh, that's so good.
I think I've seen every episode probably like five times, but also New Girl. Yeah, those three are like
love
a
it.
Good comfort.
Can you think of a piece of advice that you're glad you never took?
Ooh, anything with dieting.
Yeah.
Any diet advice.
And last one, In a word or a phrase, describe your relationship with your body today.
Compassion and grace. Yeah, that's where we are.
Beautiful. All right. We have one more question to get to before we get to that. Is there anything else that we didn't touch on you wanted to add? And then also just how can folks follow your work and connect with you?
I just had a blast. This was so meaningful and wonderful. And yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Jane Mattingly, Jane with a Y, and my Substack at This Is Body Grief with Jane Mattingly, and my website, janemattingly.com. And yeah, that's it.
Listeners right now might be in their own rock bottom.
Yeah.
When you've been in yours, is there a piece of advice you wish would have come sooner?
Lean into community. You are not a burden. You are not too much. You are not too much. You are not too much. I don't care what anyone has ever, 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 ever said. Lean into community somehow. Stay with us. You are not too much.
Thank you so much. I loved our conversation. It was so nice to get to chat with you. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Before we wrap today, I want to invite you to be part of the Becoming is Messy community. Subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss a single episode. And if there's anything that resonates with you, please leave a review. Your feedback means the world to me, and it helps other people find this community. Follow me on social media. I'd love to hear your ideas for future topics, your questions, and stories from your own messy moments. And if you're feeling inspired, check out the Becoming is Messy shop, where you can grab a mug, a t-shirt, or something else that reminds you to embrace your messy magic every single day. A huge thank you to the incredible Wolves and Sheep for providing the music for Becoming is Messy. Check them out on your favorite music streaming platform. As we close out today's episode, remember this: messy is just another word for growing. So keep showing up, keep laughing, and keep making beautifully awkward progress. Until next time, stay messy, my friends.